we're back at the Radio Real Estate Show, and Johnny DeVille has just brought us treats. I mean, what a guy, and he's rocking Johnny Jukebox, Drew Clark. Johnny DeVille is up next, and he always brings in treats. I mean, what a guy. Hey, I can't believe it. I bet you got these from Bridget's Pastry Shop. Maybe. I don't know. They look so good. I'll tell you in a few minutes. But first off, we're going to hear, Michelle's going to tell us a story, a Schubart story, which I'm really kind of actually looking forward to, because the stories are what you always remember.
Of course.
So what's the story about?
Well, I don't know if it's a story per se. It is sort of these snippets that we have. I think Scott's reminding me that I have to crystallize all of this into a very easy to understand story. But it's I talk about people who live in Schubart houses don't just like their houses, they love their houses, and they all have a story to tell about
right.
Hank. Most of the stories that really stick are the ones where he had his own ideas of things. If he wanted his clients to do something, he would talk about how little it would cost. And if he didn't want them to do something, he would say it was very expensive. There's a woman on the island who said, we went to see her, she said, come see my $500 room. And we looked at it, and it was a completely finished downstairs sort of second living room. And we said, well, this is remarkable. She said, well, it cost a lot more than $500. But it was his vision of how he wanted to persuade people. If he wanted, if someone wanted to have 10 or 12 people to be able to seat them for dinner, he would say, why have that many people for dinner? You know, if they wanted two bathrooms to accompany two guest rooms, he would say, you know, you don't want your guests to stay all the time. You want them to leave. And, he really did eventually sort of have this design palette we talked about. He distilled that over time. But I will say that not everybody wanted to live in a house that was so clearly his vision for them.
Right.
His son, Michael, had this wonderful quote, which was, when architects are young, they do what the client wants. And when they become older and more established, they do what they want. And Hank did exactly as he wanted. And I think that is, it's a credit. Nobody ever said he was wrong. I will tell you that.
And you can see that fight that he's had in the houses, because mm-hmm. some houses, the smaller houses, you could see how there was resistance. And you can hear the conversation. This is going to cost too much. I've got a small budget. And you could say, yes, but we need to put a window over here and another window over here. And it's like you can hear that conversation because you can see it.
Yeah.
And then you can see on houses where there was a bigger budget, he was allowed to say, well, since we've got this beautiful view lot, we're going to add this and this and this and one of these and a walkway. Because it's like you said, he had this palette of all these features, and he would like, oh, I'll give you one of these features and one of these, and the kitchen's going to be here and a deck off of there.
Well, he would try to restrain, I think, his clients' taste, but
right.
it was in the finish that it was, you know, there was something he called the choke point.
Right.
And, he would add in feature after feature, and then finally, when the client would say, you know, this has just got to stop, he would turn to his assistant and say, all right, we've reached the choke point. And, but he had a quote that's wonderful, and he said, people build at 45 exactly twice the house they will need at 65.
Right.
And I think he did try to think about where his clients were in life. If you notice, many of the houses, especially if they're built for the original owner who was in moving into a new phase of say, retirement, the master area is oftentimes on the same floor as the main living and kitchen. And then the guests are usually downstairs. Not always, but many.
Mm-hmm.
And so it enabled his clients to live in their houses for a very long time.
I mean, that's just it. He was very practical, too. I mean, mm-hmm. They're not all... That's what I mean. He designed a wide range. They were all not all waterfront houses with this beautiful vistas. I mean, some of them are just plain houses. I mean, it's a wide variety.
Well, and in fact, a lot of times, of course, because it's BC, the water side is the cold side.
Yeah.
And so the decks sometimes are on the interior side, people think you need a deck on the exterior side. Maybe it's a smaller deck for the view. And in fact, he was right. People will live where the sun makes it warmer.
Right.
And that is oftentimes on the inside. You know, you talked about the trees coming up through the decks, and he did not like gutters. I mentioned there was this active secondary market. He would put rain chains a lot of times.
You see a lot of the rain chains or the swales, kind of.
And of course, that meant that, you know, there was, maybe there's debris. If there's a tree coming up through the deck and or up through the roof, it would be debris, and there would be a roof notched around the tree that would drop onto the wood and the decking. But Schubart, I think that was about upkeep. That wasn't about the architecture.
Right, exactly. You know, a lot of the houses, and you could see when they were built, the trees were fairly small, and sometimes you look now, and the trees have just, like, pushed right through the deck. I mean, they're monsters growing, and, I mean, there's too many around some of the houses, but, it, you know, at the time, they probably weren't that big of trees, but it's fascinating, and I can see why he didn't like the eaves troughs, because it doesn't make sense to have an eaves trough. The water would just run down it. If you put the eaves troughs on, then all the pine needles get stuck in the eaves troughs, and it never really works. So in some ways, yeah, it was fascinating architecture.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it was hard. It was a rainy climate, and so the wood doesn't always stand up. But again, that's upkeep, and it's the beauty of the homes, I think, and the remarkable nature. He moved light inside in the interior. He would move light through the rooms without using the walls. So he didn't create a wall. He would shift the height of the ceiling, and that's really how he moved light and gave rooms their sort of contemporary feel. I mean, most Schubart houses, and I'll defer to you on this as the realtor, seems to me they need a facelift to make them contemporary.
Well, I mean, it's like anything. I mean, you know, if you have a car that's 30 years old, it could be a beautiful car, a Lamborghini, but if it's a 30-year-old Lamborghini, you're going to have to spend a lot of money on it, upkeeping it. I mean, it needs a lot. I mean,
but the houses don't feel small. They feel contemporary still.
Yeah.
But they just need a little upkeep.
Yeah, I mean, a 30-year-old Lamborghini is still a beautiful car, or an old Ferrari, an old 308. They're beautiful cars, but you have to put a lot into it. It's like a house. I mean, you can't just buy a 30-year-old house and expect to move in. Oh, it's a Schubart. I mean, it has to be maintained, brought up to modern standards. I mean, all the things change. The tiles. I mean, a lot of things just wear out, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the...
But it's the sight lines that don't wear out, and the flow of the house that doesn't wear out.
Mm-hmm.
Good architecture lasts forever. It stands the test of time, where the poor architecture, where, you know, these boxes that were just thrown up on the lot, I mean, there's nothing, you've got to go in and try to fix it, and it's really hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was, you know, again, some of the clients would say that they love their lots, and they were ready to build, and they'd talk to Hank, and I'd say, right here, this is such a beautiful spot. We want the house to go right here. And he would say, why would you want to build in the most beautiful spot? You build so you can look at the most beautiful spot. And so he would. Again, he would restrain his clients. There are some elaborate homes on the island that he did. But most of those homes, you have no sense of the scale of the house from the exterior. You have no sense for just how big some of those houses are. And, you know, that's a wonderful thing. You know, when you get in and then it's a much larger house.
Well, they're not. You know, it's, I don't want to really talk badly about other places, but when you go to some places like Calgary and you see these 10,000 square foot McMansions out, I mean, they're trying to show the size of the house when you drive by. I mean, they want you to think it's 20,000 square feet, and I mean, there's something to be said about, you know, not so ostentatious. It's just kind of, you know, low-keyed house from the street. It looks very plain and simple, and it just draws you in. And it's not as if you're trying to show everybody, you know, as they drive by, I've got this monster. Look at it. I mean, it's really an interesting way of doing it. I think it's more West Coast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're not flashing. It's like Texas, you know. We're not.
Well, you hit on. I was going to say we all can't be from Texas.
Yeah, I mean, Alberta and Texas have a lot in common, but you know, massive, you know, wall around it, and then the massive, you know, minarets and towers, and you know, I mean, you know, it's the house doesn't have to look like that to be really nice. I mean. And that's what I always, you can see a few of those houses on the island, and they kind of stick out like sore thumbs. I mean,
well, and I think it's, you know, it's all about what the client wants ultimately.
Right.
But again, you know, I think a good architect, especially one with such a specific design palette as a Hank Schubart, I mean, those people probably wouldn't find their way to a Hank Schubart, or even today, maybe a Blue Sky. I mean, there's a distinct look to those houses. And I think it's, yeah, we all can't be from Texas. We all can't just show it off and, wear our 5 pounds of gold jewelry along with it.
Well,
yeah.
Exactly. I mean, maybe it's more subdued and, and that's why I always think it's, you know, when I was younger, I was really into the Japanese gardens. And I created, when I was like 10, I created this incredible Japanese garden at my father's home. He just let me do it, and it was kind of cool. And I had, and it was all, I studied some of the Japanese architecture. And everything was hidden, so you couldn't really see the garden, and you had to wander through this little trail. And every time you go around a corner, there'd be a surprise for, oh, a waterfall, oh, a pond, oh, look at this little trail goes down, bamboo, oh, look, more bamboo. And that's the way the Japanese kind of do it. They hide it, you know. Mm-hmm. They're not going to give it to you all up front. You have to explore it and take it all in. And that's why I find that with the Schubart homes, there's usually like a hidden entrance way, and then you go down a long walkway, and the house is, oh, look, there's more down here. Oh, there's these steps that go down, and oh, it opens up. Oh, we're at the front door. Oh, look at this. And then it's this, you know, we always took the entrance way and made it, I mean, an entranceway of a house has to be grand. It has to be inviting. But he kind of hides it. And, you know, mm-hmm. you have to go to it, and it opens up. That's what I always find in his houses. They're fascinating.
Which is the very, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright. It's the, I think they call it the embrace and release.
Right.
And it's, you know, you step into it, and it sort of holds you in.
Right.
And then you step through the door, and it releases and opens
right.
you up into the grandeur of, in most Schubart houses, of straight through to the outside on the other way. You know, it pulls you through.
Right. Usually you've got that view corridor right out where once you get into the entrance where you can see out, and, oh, look, I can see Mount Baker right there. Isn't mm-hmm. that amazing? How did Mount Baker end up right? I can
right
see
there.
It. And it right down the hall and right from the front door. I mean, those beautiful sight lines.
Mm-hmm. And even in the front, the entrance, you know, many... You know, there's several houses on the island where he used a bridge
right.
as an entrance.
Right.
And it looks like a simple walkway, but you realize it's you know, each element had a function to perform as well. And, you know, there's one I saw, it's for sale up on Wilkie Way. It's in the book, The Keys House. And it's really, really a lovely, wonderful house. And it has a bridge at the entrance. And then there's some very simple cottages. There's mm-hmm. one just a little bit down. I'm trying to remember the street name, but it's also in the book. I mean, I know the house. It's the Nancy Keith Murray house. And again, a very simple bridge. Mm-hmm. This was built for a woman who was retiring and in her 60s, and she lived in that house until she was well into her 90s. Mm. And, you know, carport out by the street. In fact, first time I drove down that street, I drove right by the house. I never saw it. And I saw these smaller houses, these boxier houses. And I thought, no, that's not it. Where is it? And then,
right.
boom, there it was.
Wow.
But it was undetectable from
so
the road.
So it must have been a lot of fun going and exploring and finding these houses and meeting the owners and chatting with them. I mean, that must have been really a fun adventure.
It was. We would ask, again, it was Jane and I often together. I will say Hank's filing system of his files was that he filed everything under the name of the client.
True.
And so, you know, as time goes by, especially for the houses mm-hmm. built in the late 60s and early 70s, you know, it goes into the owner, second owner, third owner. And, you know, you have to trace that, if you will,
sure,
find
yeah.
out where the house is. We would always ask people what houses we should see. And so people would tell us, well, you have to see this one or that one. And, we found our way to again, many of them. There's up on Don Orr, there's several houses up there.
There's about three on Don Orr.
Mm-hmm, there are four. Mm-hmm.
Four? Okay. That gray one came up for sale a few years ago. I love that home.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the high side of the Rome road, and it is. It's a house just, it's got incredible architecture. I love that home. Mm-hmm. I was trying to talk a friend of mine into buying it and restoring it. It really needed someone to go in and just go through it room by room and really make it beautiful. Mm-hmm. But the sight lines on that house. And then there's a really nice one on the downside of the road, right across the road from it, just up a bit.
There's many, these houses populate the island.
Yeah.
And all throughout the island. And, it's really I think it's a big gift to this island. I will say it's also, again, a credit to the talent that is here. That, you know, whether, you know, trained by Schubart, many of them were, and, or who are here now, and an appreciation for very, you know, fine sighting, you know, for nature, for the environment. I won't say Hank was an environmentalist with his homes, because they were long in some cases and meandering. But it was, it really, you know, it's a credit to the island that, and to the people who are willing to talk to us, to find the stories and open their houses to us.
Sure. Well, thank you for coming in today. So now people can come down to
Gallery 8.
Gallery 8, which if you haven't been, it's a really nice gallery. It's right down beside Bruce's kitchen, Bruce's new kitchen, which is in Grace Point Square. And so across from Antipasto's. So that'll be on Friday night.
June 29th. It's from 5 to 8. And again, Christopher McDonald will be there. I will be there. We'll talk once, maybe twice, depending on
sure.
the crowd. It's again, it's a celebration. It's not so much a formal reading. It will be a talk about some of Schubart's work, but nothing prolonged.
And we can get a signed autographed copy.
You can get a signed copy. Salt Spring Books will be there selling books.
Oh, good.
I would say the book is available. There's a website, housesmadeofwoodandlight.com.
It's a very nice website.
And lots of photographs. We're on Pinterest under Hank Houses, Pinterest.
Okay.
And the photographs again by Jim Allender. There will be some frame photographs there on display.
Okay.
Not throughout the entire gallery, but on a portion of the gallery where we are, there will be things to snack on, and there will be libations.
Well, this will be a fun night for you because it's the end of a long journey, 6 years. I mean, that's an amazing... So what's next?
I'll figure out something.
To be another book after this, you think? Or?
There may be. I have a couple of things sort of stewing,
right.
if you will. And then, you know, I do spend, I think it's, you know, I'm certainly well equipped to poke fun at Texas. I live there other parts of the year. And, I have some things going on there.
Sure.
I'm trying to restore some historic buildings
there
and learn about ranching. I'm very much an improbable rancher.
Oh, you are? Oh, well, in your spare time when you're not writing Schubart books.
That's right. And I would say for people then come get a signed copy. Again, you can also find it from your favorite bookseller.
Right.
You know, I think Black Sheep also sells it. But again, Salt Spring Books will be there selling it.
Right.
And then I would encourage people to go on Goodreads or Amazon or Chapters and write a review, or go to housesmadeofwoodandlight.com and write a review and tweet about it. So I'd love to come and meet people and happy
to
sign your books.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it because I want to buy a copy and I want to get it signed by the author. And, no, I really think it's a great thing for the island that you've done. I really think it's, it's not as if, you know, people always think, oh, she's going to do this to make a fortune. It's
no, I can assure you that is not the case.
It's a gift that you've given the island. It really is, and the island
thank
you. And all the realtors should thank you and all the homeowners, the people that have the Schubart homes and the people that, you know, we should all be, you know, it's a beautiful gift that you've given the island. I mean, something that... it will document it and save it. And it'll probably, in some ways, people will probably want to restore the houses more now. Like, because when there was just that little bit of information, it was hard to say, you know, oh, well, it's a Schubart. And people didn't really know. Now, if they get the book and they read the book, then they might be inclined to say, you know, we're going to just take this house back to its just beautiful level instead of... you know, kind of wrecking the architecture or something.
Well, and I will say that, you know, Hank did the drawing tower at the fire hall now in transition here. So he was responsible for the renovation of that fire hall. He also, next time you walk into Foxglove Garden and Supply, the big barn warehouse.
Oh, okay.
Just scream Schubart. And he had done the renovation or the major renovation there.
Yeah, Chris and that's funny.
Yeah, it is. It's Chris Ma and, but it was Tom Gossett who, and he had done several houses for Tom Gossett.
Oh, yeah.
So, but anyway, so I look forward to meeting people, and thank you for the kind words.
Well, thank you for coming in today. It was short notice. I just saw that tweet. It's like, I was just so excited. I got to call her right now. Where's her number? Well, I mean, it's something that if you're in the business and you see the houses all the time, you're just interested in it.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful thing. Well, have yourself a great day, Salt Spring Island. And thank you for coming in today, Michelle. And we will be back next Wednesday with the Radio Real Estate Show. And the Art Beat Radio Show is on Wednesday at 4:30. Tune in and stay here. Don't turn your dial, John.